The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show.
It's the show that Mark Twain once called smarter than a blue jay, what can talk possum, and faster than a naked fat man riding a bolt of lightning.
So here's your plain-spoken homespun host, Eric Metaxas.
I don't know. I'm not sure that Mark Twain or Sam Clemens actually said that. We're gonna check on that. I am talking to Dana Lash. Now, did we just did a 30 with her? So we're just continuing the conversation. I just want people to understand this is the continuation of the conversation because we barely scratched the surface talking about your book, Grace Canceled. The title of the book is Grace Canceled: How Outrage is Destroying Lives, Ending Debate, and Endangering Democracy. It's published by Regnery. I'm published by Regnery too, but that's not why I'm having you on. I owe them nothing. Let me tell you, their advances are so low, I owe you nothing, Regnery. But it's because I love the concept of the book, and I have been following you for a while, Dana. Tell me, what was the original title? I think this can be a good way into the conversation. What was the title? Now is Grace Canceled. What was it originally?
I wanted to call it Forgiveness in the Face of Fury.
Forgiveness in the Face of Fury.
Yes. And we discussed it. And I like the title Grace Canceled because I think that it does. The book is about grace.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, ultimately, and Tom Spence was my editor over at Regnery, and he now runs it. And this was the last book that he edited, and he was very good. And one day I'll drag him kicking and screaming back to edit another one.
Right.
Forgiveness in the Face of Fury captures it as well. But Grace Canceled really does capture, I think, the theme of this book, which is how grace is denied, redemption is denied, and forgiveness is just not even thought of anymore. And it's not even just in politics, it's even culturally. And as I and others have said, politics is downstream from pop culture. And so this is something that has now seeped into, you know, our political conversations.
Right.
We can see it in the debates.
And as much as I love about this president, this is something that he has participated in. In other words, I think to be gracious, to be forgiving, it's a big thing. And we've now entered in a culture where it's just scorched earth policy, and we don't seem to have room for it. So the title of your book, Grace Canceled, it gets into the whole idea also of cancel culture, that you say one thing, no matter what you've done in your whole life, no matter whether you apologize for that thing, people like, boom, you're done, you're canceled, you're out.
Yeah.
When did this happen?
I don't know when it happened. It's been happening for quite a while, though. And the idea that, you know, we have a society that now judges people and says you can never be better than your worst moment. We're never going to give you a path towards redemption. And I got the idea for this. There were a couple of things that were factoring into the brew here of this book. And one of those was an interview that Norm Macdonald gave to Hollywood Reporter. And I've always liked Norm Macdonald. He's so dry humored, and I like dry humor. And he was talking about Roseanne Barr and what she had said about Valerie Jarrett, and she had apologized, but yet she was lost her show, and society was still coming for her.
Yeah.
And he told this reporter, he said, well, you know, she apologized, and usually when people apologize and they really mean it, we forgive them, and then they're redeemed, and we all go back to, you know, living. But society doesn't do that anymore. So what's the point of apologizing?
Well, there is none.
And exactly, because now apologies, they're not viewed as, okay, you've recognized something that you've done, so we're going to start rebuilding that relationship. Now they're looked at as surrender. They're looked at as weakness. Apologies are nothing more than a formality of surrender. That's how the left looks at it now. And that's how there's some people on the right that do as well.
Well, I was going to say, what we're talking about, since you're a Christian, we can go back to, I mean, the fact of the matter is that when someone says I did something wrong. This happened last week when you had Bloomberg, of whom I'm no fan, and Elizabeth Warren, of whom I'm less of a fan. But there was this little contretemps of, you know, what about the NDAs these women have signed and whatever. He, a couple days later, says that I will, you know, like he probably gathered with his team and they said, you know, this is really bad. You need to. So he actually released the women from the NDAs just like Elizabeth Warren said, right?
Three of them.
Well, whatever. But the point is, she immediately, instead of saying,
right,
that's a good step,
right,
I'm glad he has, blah, 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 she immediately pulls right out of the Saul Alinsky songbook, not enough. Like, not, in other words, never giving a quarter, never saying there's a moment of grace. Never. And we've seen this over and over and over again. And that's what we're talking
about. Because
politics
has gotten so desperate, you can't have grace. Because it's gotten so incredibly desperate that people, they feel that they are at such a disadvantage that even somehow acknowledging something good that your opposition has done,
right,
is you are helping give them some credibility.
Right.
And that's what they're,
right,
that's what they're mistaking. So with this, because I get into the milkshake ducks and outrage mobs and
the what?
The milkshake ducks.
The milkshake
ducks.
Not everybody on who's listening to this program, you know, is like reading Breitbart and Drudge every day. They're not familiar.
Well, this wasn't
with
on
what
those. So let me. Really easy. So a milkshake duck. This started with a tweet, and it was this account, Pixelated Boat, and they put this tweet out, and it said, "Oh, here's." And this was just basically a snapshot of how society reacts to people at the time. And still does. They said, oh my gosh, look, here's this lovely little duck. It's the media. It's this lovely little duck that loves to drink milkshakes. 5 seconds later, we regret to inform you that the duck is racist. And that seems to be how like everything is. And I have a whole list of examples. From Chewbacca Mom. You remember the lady who sat in her car and she got the Chewbacca mask from Kohl's?
That was the cutest thing
ever. Well, then they started digging into her and they thought, well, she seems privileged. It's her privilege, her white privilege, that got her this trip to Disney and everything else. And so they were attacking her for this. It was like the one guy, Iowa. The guy who was at a big college football game and he held up a sign. He had a GoFundMe account or something Venmo me to get some beer. I need some beer money. And he got so many donations, because people actually did this, if you believe it. He got so many donations, he thought, you know what, let's actually turn this into a fundraiser for children. Hospital. So he did. And a reporter in one of the local papers decided to go and dig back into his Twitter timeline, where he had quoted, I don't remember if it was Dave Chappelle, he had quoted this comedian. And this reporter took his quotation of a comedian's joke to be something racial and tried to ruin his life over it. Budweiser, that had matched his donations to this children's hospital, dropped their partnership with him, and ended up that the reporter actually had a huge history of this stuff in his timeline, because, you know, turnabout's fair play. So this is where we are. And his defense of it was, well, it was important to the story. What someone wrote 15 years ago on Twitter is not important to a current story.
Wow.
That's a milkshake duck.
Okay. I think what I always want to do on this program, try to do, is it's kind of like you mentioned etymology earlier. I want to trace things, right, to where did this come from? Before we trace where this bigger theme came from, can you tell us about the etymology of the word canceled?
So there's one L in canceled.
Right.
And so I did not realize that here I am a proud American patriot and I had been using the British spelling of this word.
Okay.
And there was a long drawn out thing that is just bores me half to death as to why we have one L and they have two L's. But long story short, the American way is one L and the British way is two L's. So if you're spelling canceled with two L's,
right,
are you really an American?
No. All right. Well, I was going to say, when we talk about this cancel culture, and this is really, really important to me as a thinker, right, as a Christian, I think, what is this? Where does this come from? Mm. And I want to explore that as we go forward. But before we go to the break here, what I was going to say is that in the Bible, it talks about Satan as the accuser of the brethren. In other words, Jesus says, yes, you're a sinner. That's why, because I love you, I came to earth to die for you, to cancel your sins,
right,
and to redeem you. The devil says, you're a sinner, you're a sinner, you're a sinner, you're a sinner. You'll never be redeemed, and on and on and on. And so there really is a spiritual component to this. I want to explore when
there's
we come back.
There's a lot of Bible in this book.
Because it is really ugly, and we need to understand what's happening in our culture. We'll be right back with Dana Lash. The book is Grace Canceled. 1L. Hey there, folks. It's Eric Metaxas. I'm talking to Dana Lash. We're talking about her book, Grace Canceled, spelled with one L. And Dana, I was just talking about how did we get here, right? In other words, this idea that somebody does something wrong, we don't forgive them, we don't forget. It strikes me as Marxist. It's cultural Marxism. It's take no prisoners. It's crush the enemy without any love, without any grace. It's fundamentally un-American. It's unbiblical.
Yep.
And people on the right, some of them have reciprocated, and it upsets me when people on the right do what people on the hard left have been doing.
Yeah, I saw it happen this week when there was an article that was published, I want to say Politico did it, 2 days ago, and it was discussing how particularly if Democrats nominate this communist, Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
If they nominate him as their party's presidential candidate, is that going to, and it looks like it is, at least for some, the people who always oppose Trump, not just in the primary, but also in the general in 2016, which is a significant difference. If those people I call them the crystal cons, if some of them are going to come around and support the president because they cannot allow their absence to lend Sanders any sort of support, or they themselves cannot give him support, how the voters, the Republican Party, the Trump supporters should welcome them back.
Right.
And I had retweeted this, and I said, actually, that's how it should be. They should welcome these people back. Don't rub their faces in it. Let's build a coalition. And some of the responses I got were, no. Let them suffer the consequences.
Yeah.
No, let them never have any influence, which is kind of a straw man because no one brought up giving influence over anything. And I feel as though that when we react that way, and it might feel like Schadenfreude, and it might feel personally satisfactory, but
yeah.
It is detrimental to the cause you say you support, and you betray your own. You betray your mission.
And listen, because. We don't have a ton of time. Let me just say, people who espouse that point of view are just flat out wrong, usually out of ignorance. I mean, let's try to remember the first Republican, Abraham Lincoln, talked about showing grace to the enemy that we defeated in the war. Mm. And why did he do that? Because he's a milksop? Because he doesn't understand, what it means to win? Elections have consequences. Wars have consequences.
Because he understands what it is to be a leader.
Well,
and leaders aren't so unconditionally punitive that they don't set up someone to for a path of redemption. And that's the whole thing. If it's about ego, then you're not in this for the right thing. If you're in this for the cause, and you're in this to widen the tent, and you're in this to build a coalition, then you welcome supporters. You welcome
yeah.
those people with whom you have common ground.
Well, people, I think we've seen this with, Trump derangement syndrome. People have given themselves permission.
It's the prodigal son brother syndrome, too, now.
Now, there you go. There's a good scriptural reference. We talk about that before I rant on my...
It is. Well, it's, the story of the prodigal son and the brother who's jealous and the brother who cannot believe that his father has the capacity for such forgiveness and to allow the brother to come back in and to welcome him with open arms.
Mm.
And so many people don't realize that this is a theme that's repeated over and over again. I mean, is it not also the story for us? And I get so frustrated with it because I look at some of these people who themselves are so very graceless, and so much grace has been extended to them, and they think that grace is kindness, or they think that grace is sanction and grace is acceptance. Grace is unmerited favor, and they don't understand this concept.
Well, it's wonderful to hear you say this because I've noticed the same thing. There are people. Twitter's the first place you'll see it. Mm-hmm. If you say anything nuanced.
Nuance
gracious,
is dead. I have a whole chapter on that.
You have a chapter on nuance is dead?
Nuance is dead. That's what it's called.
It's kind of funny because you think that wouldn't you want – I mean, look, if people aren't Christians or they don't care about what the Bible says, I can understand they've got some other worldview. But I would be the first to say that that worldview will not work. In the long run, it'll eat you alive.
Yes.
And the fact is that if you show love and mercy and kindness and forgiveness, Jesus commands us to love our enemies. It doesn't mean you agree with them. It doesn't mean you give them power to destroy other people. But it means you treat them the way you would want to be treated if you happen to be in their case.
It is no credit to you to only like and be kind to the people who are kind and like you. It is absolutely of zero credit. There is no sacrifice of anything, no sacrifice of ego, no selflessness to only be kind to those who are kind to you. It is immense strength to show grace to people who are mean to you, and who don't deserve it, but you don't deserve it either. But we all yet are under it.
I think that a lot of times, I wrote a book about William Wilberforce, and Wilberforce was so gracious toward his enemies. And I think the reason he had the strength to do that was because he himself understood how much he had been forgiven.
Right.
In other words, if you're truly redeemed, if you truly have accepted Jesus, you know that you don't deserve his love and forgiveness. So you have a humility. And when you approach people, you don't come at them with this like high-handed, you know, moral outrage, which is what is in your subtitle, this outrage. Mm. But you say, you know what? Apart from the grace of God, I would be that jerk. I would be that self-serving Pharisee who, you know, thinks he's so good that he would never vote for so-and-so. So that could be you. And if you don't think it could be you, then you're a hypocrite.
I have a good illustration of that. One of the chapters I have is Make Grace Great Again in this book. And you remember the first nationwide Chick-fil-A boycott. Remember that? It was back in like 08, 09.
Yeah.
And one of the tactics was to go up to the restaurant and ask for some water. You know, you give your water, give your enemy water, you know. And there was one videotaped interaction between a man named Adam who went through the drive-thru and was speaking to a woman named Rachel. And this was at a Chick-fil-A restaurant in Arizona. And he was unbelievably cruel to her. He recorded himself berating her, just insulting her. And she kept her calm. She was incredibly gracious. She had tears in her eyes. And he was so hateful. And he thought he was doing something unbelievably amazing. He was so big and bad. Well, he put that video out on the internet, and the internet does what the internet does. And they found him, and he was canceled. He lost his job. He went on food stamps. And I'll be honest with you, I was one of those people that went, he deserved it. This is what happens. You are being humbled. And then I watched an interview with her. She gave one interview. She was on with Stuart Varney. And she had her fiance also mic'd up next to her for emotional support. He did not speak. And Stuart said, you're just a hero for the way that you handle this. And she said, no, I'm not. She goes, I'm a service worker, which I thought was the most underappreciated statement of the decade. And she said, I treated him with the same kindness that I hope everyone else does. And I was shocked at her grace. And I thought, you know what? We, instead of being her, we were him. That is how
that's
we should
a
act.
Sermon, ladies and gentlemen. Rewind this. This is a sermon. That's the prodigal son sermon on the Eric Metaxa Show, courtesy of Dana Lash, because that is exactly what that is. And look, we need to. It's one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you about this, because we need to acknowledge this, that we have a choice. Schadenfreude, hating when you have the opportunity, kicking somebody when they're down. I've seen this. Conservatives whom I greatly admire, I've seen them do this.
I've done it.
Well, people will do these things, right? So then the question is, what is our philosophy? Do we believe that it's right to do that? And, you know, look, there is a time when, you know, to pummel somebody and to say, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong. But then there comes
a
time.
There's a time for anger, but.
There's a time for anger. But then there comes a time to say, look, in fact, I'll tell you, when Chris Cuomo was being berated for that, for the Fredo stuff that came out, it was hilarious, right? Sean Hannity defended him. And I thought, wow, that is so big of Sean. I'm kind of blown away.
Right.
I'm moved by that because Sean, whom I love, he in past years has kicked people when they were down. There was the Alec Baldwin tape with his daughter, whatever.
Oh,
and Sean is playing it over and over. And I'm thinking, brother, don't do that. He's a father. And just because you differ with him politically, you know, But all these years later, he was defending Chris Cuomo, whom he differs with dramatically. But he took the high road, and I thought, wow, we need more people to do that. It will really lead to good things.
And I think, honestly, and I don't mean this in any sort of egotistical way, I think that believers have a responsibility, and I think that they, I think that we are, as people of faith, are better equipped to take the first step than those who are still struggling.
Well, because we're supposed to know. I mean, look, let's lay our cards on the table. If somebody claims to be a Christian, the reason so many people are not Christians.
There's people who are Christians and then they're disciples.
There are plenty of people that claim to be Christians and they completely do not follow any of this stuff, right? And all they do is push people away from Jesus. But the point is, if you claim to be a Christian and you dare to claim that you follow Jesus, you have no choice. You must do what he says, which is to be gracious toward your enemies. You've got to be, it doesn't mean you're helping them do bad things. It means you're trying to help them move in the right direction. You're trying to give them an olive branch, give them a cup of water, whatever. If Christians can't get that, we're in big trouble. And that's why we're having this wonderful conversation with Dana Lash. The book is Grace Canceled. We'll be right back.
But it must be moving on. Like a king without a castle, like a queen without a throne.
Folks, I'm talking to Dana Lash. That song is Spirit in the Sky. Again, I want to listen to the music, but I'd rather talk to you, Dana. Dana, you were just sharing how this concept of extending an olive branch, of loving your enemy, of practicing what you preach, it's hard. You said even in the writing of this book, you had to deal with that.
Yeah, I wanted to stop writing this book about maybe a third of the way into it. One of the things I tell people, especially, well, first off, if I'm telling people that they need to slow their roll and maybe, I don't know, maybe embody a little bit more grace, then that should scare you if I'm telling you this. The hair on your arm should stand up. Your spiritual antenna should be tuning in. Two things on this. The first was, and this features heavily in the book, that CNN town hall right after Parkland. And I get into some of the behind-the-scenes stuff with it. And that town hall took place on a Wednesday. I found out that I was going down there on a Tuesday, and I found out that I was going to be on stage that when I was getting on the plane, and when I got there, I found out that I was going to actually be speaking. And it was, you know, for all intents and purposes, it was a setup. And I was nervous when we took off to go down there. We left in the middle of a thunderstorm. The whole sky was angry, and everything was just, I mean, there was so much imagery, and it was very heavy. And I think that was the longest time I've ever prayed in my life. It was the entire flight from Dallas to Florida I spent in genuine, sincere prayer, because I'm like, look, you've seen me, right? It's like a little bit of a kind of a Sons of Thunder moment. I'm like, you've seen me, right? Like, I'm the person who's jumped off of stages at events, like in Wisconsin with Scott Walker, and have confronted people who were yelling nasty things, people who were like twice my size and four times my weight. Really, you're sending me down here? Because my first choice is not to show grace. My first choice is throw you to the ground and ground and pound. So we get down there. And when I got off the plane, I don't think I had ever been as calm. I was more calm then than I think I've ever been in my life. Ever. I was able to process everything. It was like everything was moving in slow motion.
It sounds like perhaps prayer works.
Yeah, it does.
Perhaps.
Does. And I had no fear. Even when I was walking out into the arena, they cued me to walk out to a Black Eyed Peas song, Let's Get It Started, like it was some sort of, boxing match. And go out there, and people are already screaming, lots of things that I can't say on air. And when I got on the stage, I just felt incredibly calm and no fear and no nervousness or anything. And there's no way because every, I mean, I would have been justified with some of the individuals to return spite for spite, but that would not have solved anything. That would not have moved the ball down the field, and it would have been horrible witness and horrible, horrible advocacy.
When you say it was a setup, you mean that CNN knew that, you know, you're kind of a hothead, you're fiery, and I say this in a good
way.
Well,
I think they were
fiery, and they thought that we're going to have a rumble.
I think they did anticipate a certain reaction from me, but I also think that they, because they allowed the former sheriff of Broward County to go up and give an election speech, and Robert Runcie to do the same. They had a political rally right before they had this town hall there. So it was already, I mean, Jake Tapper even came back behind the scenes and said, I don't have control of the room. And we knew it was going to, I had a 3-person security detail when I was leaving. One of them had to break off and grab a woman who had jumped the stage and was coming at me. And the other ones had to get me off the stage because the rollaway stairs were being removed from the stage rising in the middle of the arena. But I didn't, I walked out calmly and I looked at everyone. I was still calm. I got back on the plane and we had a flight to D.C. where I had to speak at CPAC and be there very early because the vice president was going to be there in the morning. We had to get through Secret Service. And that was, I think, the most I felt that I had ever been immersed in grace. And then when I pitched this book, because there was, and it was important for me because my son, who's now a freshman in college, he wants to go into constitutional law, and he was watching all of this, and my youngest son was as well, and I wanted them to see the barrage of hate stopped with kindness. Like, this will diffuse it. This will snuff it out. So when I pitched this book, I was really excited about it. And I'm like, this is going to be easy to write. I can talk about this issue. I have, and everything was great. Son was going to college. I just, everything is kittens and sunshine. It is easy to talk about good things when you're in a good place, is it
right.
not?
Yeah.
So I'm like, grace. Everyone listen to me about grace. And then several things happened. My son went away to college, and I am one of the most prepared people you will ever meet. I do not delegate. I don't have ghostwriters. I don't have research assistants. I grab my own audio. I am insane. I want it done a certain way, and I will do it. I don't have an assistant, nothing. And it's awkward for me to work with Grant, God love him, and he does the publicity at Regnery because I'm so used to doing everything on my own. And my son went away. He's going away to college. And I had prepared for everything except him actually leaving the house. And it was like mourning. It was just so, it was awful. It was like a death. So I'm like, okay, we'll get through this. And then one of the advocacy groups that I worked with for a year got into a fight with another entity, a big power struggle. And I was a casualty of that. And so were some friends of mine. And I'm watching an issue, maybe perhaps endangered by this power struggle. And I was livid, and I wanted to tear this book up and write the most fiery tell-all that could ever be written and shoot it into the stratosphere.
Wow. And you didn't.
No.
Somehow you didn't. I think we're going to another break here. All right, folks, I know you're not going to go away, so why would I even ask you not to? I'm talking to Dana Lash. The book is Grace Canceled. Nothing worse than interrupting Glenn Campbell, but I'm talking to Dana Lash. Dana, you talk about grace in this book, Grace Canceled, and you mentioned Dan Crenshaw. Remind my audience of what that was about.
So Dan Crenshaw was, because obviously from his time in service, he had lost an eye, and he wears, you know, the eye patch. And it was on SNL. The headlines, and one of their comedians had his name's Pete. One of their comedians had actually made fun of him. What I don't really think I can say on air what he was.
Well, the comedian who made fun. I can't think of his last name, and I'm glad, but it's Pete. And he has
issues as well. He lost his father in 9/11. and, you know, when he was young. And so that obviously that I think factors into it. And he's been quite public about some of the issues that he deals with. And he was making fun of Dan Crenshaw for
But he could be very nasty. And I've actually seen him a couple of times. Mm. And I thought that he's just out of line. And it gave me permission to hate his guts. Mm, and I had to do a check. Right.
Yeah,
because I'm not allowed to hate people. But he can do that.
Yeah.
And so what does Dan Crenshaw do after this comedian makes fun of the fact that he lost his eye?
It was the internet that went after him first.
Yeah.
And then Crenshaw got involved and said, you know, this is not how we solve things. And he was very diplomatic in handling it. And because of the way that he responded, because you can't control others' reactions, but you can control your own.
Right.
And because of the measured way that he responded, Pete ended up being on SNL in that same headline segment. And he joked about Pete's appearance a little bit, and it was very good natured and very fun. And in the end, Pete looked at the camera and he had apologized to him. And he said, you know, I'm glad that you were able to be here. And it was a very genuine moment that would not have happened if Dan had not responded the way he had originally. He would have robbed that moment.
Right. Somebody has to be the big person, and Dan Crenshaw was that big person, and it changes everything.
And I want to stress to people, because I think, Eric, so many people on our side think that it is a weakness. It is the hardest thing you can do when you choose to act graciously. It is a choice that you make every day, because we are not predisposed to this.
Look, we have to go back to the text. And I say to people, there are a lot of people listening who think of themselves as some kind of Christian, okay? That's fine, folks. But if you want to use that term, you have to understand that Jesus, who was perfect, when he was nailed to the cross, said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do.
Right.
That is our model. Now, if you don't want to follow that, that's fine. But do not ever call yourself a Christian, because that is the model we're called to. And God says he will give us the power to live like that. We're not going to live like that on our own. On our own, we want to hate and kill, because that's the most normal thing in the world. When somebody treats you like trash, you want to give back. But when you see examples of this kind of leadership, I think of Jackie Robinson. I've written about him. He made a deal, you know, when he was going to go and break the color barrier, that because of what Jesus said, he would not fight back. He would have every reason to want to kill these people, calling him the N-word and whatever. But he said, I call myself a Christian, and I'm going to promise Branch Rickey, who, you know, hired him with the Dodgers, that I will not fight back, because I actually care about the long term.
Right.
I don't just want to win a fight.
Right.
I want to win the barrier of blacks being kept out of the major league. That's what I want to win. So I'm going to keep my eyes on the prize. And we need to hear that. It's why I'm so glad you wrote this book, Dana, because, you know, you're a fiery person. And when a fiery person says, I can do this, we need to do this, I think people pay attention.
Well, I hope that people enjoy it. And there's a lot in there. I mean, I talk about grace. I talk about the death of redemption. I even get into the political situation that we are in now, where you, for instance, Pete Buttigieg, what he had said recently, and I see a lot of people discussing this, where he had brought up that, well, I don't know how the president, you know, I'm a Christian, and I don't know how the president's behavior, I can't reconcile that with scripture. And I thought, well, we're all flawed people. Some of us are not trying to mainstream sin into faith or into party policy. And everybody falls short of the glory of God, obviously. But for that to be used and presented so exclusively and used as a cudgel instead of as a way to welcome people into the fold, I put in there, I'm like, we have so many bouncers of the political party, and we have bouncers of the faith. We need more shepherds. So maybe don't approach it like that.
Well, also, it's particularly arrogant, because here's somebody who has somehow managed to construe scripture so that it's okay for a man to marry another man. Since the beginning of the scriptures, going back into the Old Testament, people have always said that that's out of bounds. So Pete Buttigieg and others, I think they're playing a political game.
Yes.
Basically. They're picking what they like, and then they're ignoring what they don't.
Yes.
Like. And, you know, we have to show grace to everybody, including our political enemies like Pete Buttigieg. We have to try to do that.
I agree entirely.
And it ain't easy.
No, it is not easy at all. It's not easy at all. And as we barrel towards 2020, the other thing I think of is, and I discussed this as well, but you know, I get it. You know, the president tweets things that people don't like, or he said thing and said things in the past that people don't like. But I always go back to, if perfection were required for office, none of us would be eligible. We need to be realistic when we are evaluating other individuals. And we also, I think, need to keep in mind that if you are saying that God cannot work through flawed people, I view that as you are questioning his very omnipotence, which to me, that's a pretty serious issue. So maybe you want to spend some time on prayer before you do it.
No, that's so true. It's kind of funny, too, because you talk about cancel culture. What Trump did on a hot mic 15 years ago, like, seems to outweigh, you know, killing babies every day and saying that we need to be able to do this. And you think, wow, like, we know we're all screwed up. Can we, like, try to have some balance as we look at this? And we know that JFK, whose face is on our coinage, he brought prostitutes into the White House routinely. I mean, if you want to do cancel culture, you're going to get rid of our 50 cent piece like yesterday. It's a little complicated. Dana, we're basically out of time, but it's so wonderful to get to know you and your story. I know my audience is grateful for this time. Congratulations on the book, folks. It's called Grace Canceled: How Outrage is Destroying Lives, Ending Debate, and Endangering Democracy. Dana, thank you so much.
Eric, thank you so much. Appreciate you.
Ash Wednesday.
Yes.
Actually, that's a joke. You can't say happy Ash Wednesday.
I know,
the whole idea is that it's ashes. It's the opposite of happy. It's contrition, right?
It's this idea
that it's this reminder of our mortality and of what's it all about and where we're headed, folks.
And every year I always say on Ash Wednesday, think fast.
That was funny.
Yeah.
Albin.
Okay, let's go on.
Why do they always say you're not funny? You are funny.
A little bit.
All right. On Ash Wednesday, we thought it would be appropriate today to kick off our spring campaign to help kids and families facing malnutrition and starvation in Guatemala. Wow. I mean, again, we are so blessed in this country, in the West. We are hugely blessed. And we have to realize that there are places in this world. I mean, actually, Guatemala specifically has the highest level of malnutrition in the Western Hemisphere. And I want people to think about this concept, malnutrition. Do you know anybody suffering from malnutrition? It's the sort of thing we think doesn't exist. But in our own hemisphere, not very far from our own borders, there are people suffering from malnutrition. Well, the good news is that Food for the Poor and other organizations do tremendous work. How do they do it? Do they do it because there's a great profit incentive? No, they do it because they think it's the right thing to do. So I want to just say that Food for the Poor right now is working with us on this program. You can see a banner at our website, MetaxasTalk.com, and your donation will help the poorest of the poor in Guatemala. Actually, Food for the Poor has Representative Alice Marino. Let's play Alice.
Because you can make a difference with just so little. So little goes such a long way. And, you know, God will reward you. And you're going to feel so good about changing the life of a child. So please go online or go on the phone right now and make that difference.
Mm-hmm. We have to remind ourselves, ourselves over and over and over again that this is real, that there are people struggling to put food on the table. And this is in Guatemala, as I say, highest level of malnutrition in the Western Hemisphere. So Food for the Poor goes right there. They need your help. But here's the amazing thing, truly amazing. The economies of places like Guatemala are so bad that $80 American dollars can provide food for an entire year and water for life. They're drilling wells. You've seen videos of this on, you know, here and there. There are places where they have to walk miles and miles and miles for clean water. There's disease in the water. So a one-time gift of $80, think about this, folks, provides food for 1 year and water for life for a kid in Guatemala. It literally saves lives, and I don't need to tell you, preaches the gospel of Jesus Christ. Who do you why do you think people are doing this? Mm-hmm. Because they believe in Jesus and what he says, and so that's food for the poor. So if $80 provides food for a year, $320, which is 4 times 80, provides the same blessing, obviously, for a family of four. That ends up being just $27 a month. Some people would prefer to give that way. This is a great way to remind your kids in your family of where your values are. You use this as an opportunity, and you say, we're giving $27 a month. You can require your kids to chip in from their allowances, from what little money they make, doing chores, whatever it is. I just want to say this is a great teaching opportunity, and the results are so dramatic. When you think that $320 could feed an entire family for 1 year, that is the kind of scale we're talking about. So I'm going to give you a phone number. You can go to our website again. It's metaxastalk.com. I want people to give as generously as they can. 844-863-HOPE, 844-863-HOPE, 844-863-HOPE. God bless you. I don't care.